What's up next? It's hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We did get a request in from one of our favorite geeks out there who wanted something from apexdevice.net. And it is a brain stimulator. He thinks a lot of geeks would love to have a brain stimulator. Only $135.
And where do you get it? From Apex? Is that
Apex
an online source?
Apexdevice.net. That's
okay, apexdevice.net.
Brain
stimulator for your favorite geek. Okay,
there you go. Brain stimulators, it's the latest thing. They're like electronic drugs.
Okay.
9-volt Nirvana, I think the Radiolab story went on that. So that's another topic. Right now, we're going to be talking about the Internet of Things. You might have heard about that. And being near Christmas and all, things being in so much part of our consciousness, we thought we'd bring a little bit more awareness to what the Internet of Things is about. And for that, we have Mark Cantor on the line. Mark, somebody in the microcomputer industry we've known for at least 20, 25 years. He was one of the pioneers in multimedia. And what most of you may know today that was related to his lineage would be, I think, the Flash technology.
Yes.
Stuff that Steve Jobs hated so much.
Now Adobe Flash started out in Mark's hands as a program called Shockwave, I believe. Hi, Mark.
So I can tell you the details if you care.
Yeah, totally.
A little bit. We're geeks enough to care about that.
All right, so the thing started as a tool called VideoWorks. We're the people who invented multimedia players. ComicWorks was a separate tool. They weren't from the same company, but they weren't the same code. And VideoWorks evolved into Director. That's when the venture capitalists came in. They diluted me down. They kicked me out of my own company.
Wow.
And that company went from MacroMind to MacroMedia.
Gotcha.
And
yeah.
Then me and a bunch of other people from MacroMind left to go join Kaleida Labs. Mm-hmm. And we started working on multimedia system software. And MacroMedia abandoned our code. Okay.
Wow.
And only until Kaleida Labs developed something, an alternative called ScriptX, did MacroMedia realize, oh, well, we've got that too. And they launched Shockwave.
Wow.
Along comes this thing called the web. And MacroMedia never engineered Shockwave to be able to be small, to be able to be downloaded over a dial-up modem.
Wow.
Right? It was too big. It was designed for CD-ROMs, you know?
Yeah, much higher bandwidth compared to the net in those days, yeah.
Yeah, so they went and bought Flash, okay?
Uh-huh.
And Flash was a clone. They had copied us, you know, more or less ripped us off, right? But because it's from the same company, no one ever sued anybody because, you know, we own it anyway. So
right.
What happened was that bifurcated the developers. So there was the old school developers who were into video and graphics and multimedia and high res. And then this Flash stuff came along and it was really designed for ads, you know.
Oh.
And it took them 10 to 15 years to catch up to where Director and Shockwave was.
Well, weren't you all in the same company and didn't you teach the ones that copied you how to really do it?
Yeah, well, by then I was long gone anyway. So, the real tragedy of the whole thing was that Flash turned into a closed platform, right? Which is the antithesis of who I am and what we started. We're into openness and enabling people. And then Flash was this closed platform. And that's one of the reasons why Steve Jobs killed it.
Because of the closeness of the platform?
Yeah.
Wow. Boy, well, I'm happy to get the story straight here from your perspective, Mark, because, you know, I, of course, rode that whole wave of the early days of the computer software revolution, and I loved all your products. I was such a Director fan, and nothing really, I don't think there's anything even now in the marketplace that has such a good interface. I really loved it.
Well, in fact, I can tell you that this new company I'm working on is very much picking up where we left off, right? It's a tool for everybody, for non-programmers, people like yourself. And so the idea that one could go to the Internet of Things, you know, everyone will be hearing about this new Apple Watch.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
That'll be the big thing this spring and summer.
Mm-hmm.
So let's imagine you hear this ad about the Apple Watch. And the question is, are you a consumer who will buy the Apple Watch? Or can you imagine something in the back of your head that you could imagine doing with the Apple Watch? You know, that you're a developer and you want to create something cool, artistic, educational, conceptual, experimental, whatever. It would be absolutely impossible for you to do that without our tools. So that's what our new company is doing.
Oh, very cool. All right. Well, yeah. To the degree that we have to have advertising to make everything else possible, I suppose it's good. It does make jobs for artists.
No, absolutely. And we don't necessarily think we can make money off of that, right? We just want to put the tool out there. Same thing with education and teachers, you know. But where it makes money is, let's say, a therapist, you know, and they've got a client who has anxiety attacks, right? So they're wearing one of these watches or Fitbits or something, and they can keep track of their heart rate, their blood pressure. And then when one of these clients, these patients, has an attack, well, then the therapist can immediately find out, and he can intervene at various levels and various protocols to help that person. So there's applications of this stuff across the board. I mean, it's a fantastic opportunity.
Yeah, it does lead to a lot of personalized healthcare.
Exactly. That's the key word here, is personalized.
Right, right. Well, so not just personal computers for computing, but for your own health.
Right, and it's different for everybody. So the inspirational book that helped change my life was called The Age of Context. It's by Robert Scoble and Shel Israel. Yeah, and in there it explains that software of the future, once the software knows who you are, who your friends are, what's your context, where you are, what time it is, you can make the software adapt to the context.
Absolutely. So listen, Mark, we're going to have to go to a little break, and then we're going to be able to come back and talk a lot more about how to do this right and a lot of the other issues that come up, like how to address people's privacy, how to
Internet of Things.
Right.
You know, need to know who they're sharing their data with, stuff like that. Anyway, more after the break here on the Dr. Future Show with our guest, Mark Cantor.
Coolio.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Mark Cantor. Mark, we've all been hearing about this thing called the Internet of Things. And I brought you on specifically because you just wrote an article about this topic, about how much confusion there is on even what it means. So I wonder if you could elucidate for our audience your understanding of the basic term, the Internet of Things.
I see it as the evolution of computing. Right? It's the ultimate battle of man versus machine. You might start to hear the term M2M, which refers to machine to machine.
Yeah.
What Silicon Valley wants, what technology wants, is to cut the humans out, you know? Just have the machines talk to each other. It's Skynet, and we're all, you know, gotten rid of. You know, the robots do all the work.
The end of biological intelligence as we know it, huh?
Right, and you're going to hear a lot of that. You're going to see a lot of backlash as these humans say, well, wait a minute, we don't want to get cut out of the equation, right? So if you look at as we evolve from big computers to small computers, and then along comes multimedia, and then along comes mobile, and now the next culmination out is this giant thing keeps expanding, is that with low power and with very extremely intelligent systems, we've got billions and billions of objects that have a little Siri in them. It's a little bit of an iPhone. It's doing big data. It is a media machine. It's basically got everything, a culmination of the entire industry, all coming together. And so I don't believe the Internet of Things can exist without mobile and mobile apps, without social and all the ramifications of working with people, and without digital media and streaming content, which is what we're doing right now. We're creating media over the radio.
Most importantly, to include the humans in the equation, right? To make
exactly.
it something that's perhaps serving us rather than replacing us.
Yeah, one good metaphor, I don't know if you're into Neal Stephenson, he wrote a book called Diamond Age.
Yeah, right? That was a great book.
But there's this tutor, right? So there's no such thing as AI. That's the key thing to remember. There will never be Skynet What we've got is two humans on either end of the wire, and the software is in the middle between the two humans. Mm-hmm. And the software amplifies the relationship and the set of possibilities that's possible. And typically we're talking like, you know, master-slave, teacher-student, therapist-to-patient, trainer-to-client, tour guide to tourist. You know, it's like these paired combinations of people, and the software is in the middle. And we're using these devices, whether they're Fitbits or your smart home or intelligent light bulbs or thermostats. And those devices just give us more information, which is the context, right? So as we know the context, we can then do smart things. And that's these new experiences.
Now, don't you think a smart thing would be for our personal supercomputer in our pockets, our smartphones, to have a sort of an AI doctor that tracks us personally and is aware of us? Wouldn't that be useful? Wouldn't that be
AI? I don't believe in AI, right? So,
okay. Well, it would be an intelligent, reflective program, though.
But So look, even a doctor or nurse or a nutritionist has a hell of a time trying to remember everything, right?
And they're certainly not going to track all of us individually.
And if you go look at the new Apple Health Kit, you'll see all these absurd amounts of data. Like, there is no software that can tell me how much bromide is in something, right? I mean, so they're projecting ahead. In the future, we'll be able to track bromide or all these weird nutrients and all these chemicals. And that's great in the future. So we're projecting ahead that these computer tools, databases, big data, intelligence, all this stuff will help, and it'll be a tool or new kind of services, right? So typically in the case of health, you'd sign up for some service and, you know, you'd tell them who you are and your context. I'm trying to lose weight, gain weight, get rid of this. You know, I'm getting old. I got diabetes, whatever your issues are. Yeah. And that person would work with you. And let's not forget that, and this is exactly the point of my software, you still need human motivation. You can't be losing weight or worrying about health at all. It's not going to happen automatically. You know, you can't rely. And that's why, by the way, I don't know if you know, 80% of all these Fitbits and these devices that are getting purchased, 80% of them get set aside in the first 3 months.
People just don't find them interesting enough.
Goes away.
And they buy them thinking they're going to put it on their wrist and they magically lose weight.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
I mean, don't forget.
Maybe Lactobacillus will do it.
It's like a $50 billion business. I mean, there's so many people that are so trapped into their, you know, to their ghetto of sugar and carbos and, you know, like all the negativity and fast food and chemicals and medication. And so everyone's desperate to try to lose weight. And they think, oh, I'll just go buy one of these Fitbits and all my problems will go away.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're not. Okay.
No, and that's what's going on. But please continue to ask me more questions.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the M2M paradigm. You know, what machine-to-machine things are going to be going on, and what will the human be asking the M2M to do?
Classic example, it's M2M on an ongoing basis, but the human has to set it up first, okay? So the classic would be, I'm driving up my driveway, and my garage door recognizes that it's me in my car. Mm-hmm. Like, why should you have to hit a button to open up the garage door?
Oh, so this is kind of already happening, like when people just bring their keys next to their car and the car opens up.
The ambient computing model, too.
Absolutely. All that stuff. So the Internet of Things is this giant umbrella, and every single company out there is frothing at the mouth. How can I jump on this buzzword du jour? You know, look, we're all old enough to remember this happened with multimedia, with productivity software, with the Internet. It's just another trend, another new way to justify a new round of you know, conferences and newsletters and blogs and, you know, and experts and everyone. You know, so every company's out there, they're making a lot of money. And no one's really even sure what the Internet of Things even means.
Right.
Well, I think it started with, like, your refrigerator would know when to...
It knows how old your cheese is and if it's moldy.
Okay, but again, so the cheese has a barcode on it.
Yeah.
It has an expiration date. So the refrigerator won't be able to figure that shit out unless you hold the cheese up to the barcode reader, swipe it, And now, yeah, it'll keep track of when 3 weeks or a month goes by.
Yeah,
right?
It's been sitting there.
But unless the human tells it, swipes it, the barcode. Remember that famous moment when Bush was running for re-election and he's standing in line in a grocery store and they're doing the laser scanning of the barcodes? And he goes, oh, really? Does everyone have that now? And it showed that he was just completely out of clue. He had never gone grocery shopping in 20 years.
Yeah, right.
Right? So nowadays, every single person is holding a smartphone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. They're texting. They're looking at the screen, right? That's our society today, right?
Oh, so it's amazing. You know, we went to a party with a lot of people who had emigrated from Tibet and Nepal.
This weekend.
And some of them were dressed in, like, traditional Tibetan clothing, and they were dancing traditional Tibetan dances, and they were staring at their smartphone from the sidelines. Yeah. I mean, it was such a culture contrast.
So it's connecting all of us, right? It's probably going to connect 7 billion people with the...
No, absolutely, absolutely. And that's the good news, right? The good news is that technology can improve our lives, can create jobs. I mean, there's lots of good news, right? Needless to say, the powers of evil are going to try to do everything they can to cut out the humans, to make more profit for themselves. I mean, so that's why I say this is really the battle between man and machine. It's just the same battle we've been fighting all along. And I'm lining up trying to create some new tools, new kind of stethoscope, new kinds of ways that teachers and artists and creative people can use this Internet of Things to build cool and compelling experiences.
And how about creative people being able to make a living from their machines too, where it brings in money rather than just sucking it from us?
What a notion. You know, the other day I was in Felton, and my friend Roger McNamee was playing a gig.
Yeah.
Now, Roger's got a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
So he pulls up. He's got the satellite dish. You know, he's got the full light show, 3 roadies. I mean, there's no way he's making a profit, but he loves what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the thing about artists that the business people don't understand, is that when you have a motivation in your life that's other than making money, that really flummoxes them. They really don't understand. And this is what's happened in our technology industry. Back in the day when we all got to know each other, I was building Macromind not for the purposes of making money. You know, it was to change the world. Software has this amazing ability to change the world.
Yeah. Let me remind you of a few things that you've been responsible for over the years that will give our audience a little bit of a flavor of where you're hanging out, because you're just so creative. The things I remember that were so unusual is, didn't you create something that was for people to use their nose, like it was some kind of a smell interface?
Smell-o-vision, yeah. Or something?
It was called DigiSense.
DigiSense, yeah. Right. And then you also were one of the very first people trying to create a remote band software, right?
Yeah.
So people could, like, hang out in their studio at home, but they could jam with each other wherever they were.
Yeah, 20 years too soon, right?
Yeah, so right.
That became really popular. It's called Guitar Hero or GarageBand. Uh-huh. And I was doing that with Todd Rundgren in the early 90s before the internet.
Right, right. So, you know, creativity, I know, has always been a driving force in the stuff you're trying to create. You're trying to serve creative people.
Right, so software is the new rock and roll, right? So I figured that out in the 80s, that the new form of expression wasn't like playing guitar and screaming. It was creating software. And so in typical fashion, what I did was 5 years ago, I left Silicon Valley and I moved to Cleveland. All right? Because I had to get out of the echo chamber. I had to get away from this world that is 100% about technology. And I had to go to some place where there are humans and people and issues beyond technology mattered. And when I got there, the only thing anybody wanted to talk about was jobs.
Oh, God. All right. Well, listen, Mark, we got to take a break.
Right? Yeah.
All okay.
Right. Can you stay on for another segment?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, great. All right, folks, you're listening to the Dr. Future Show with our guest, Mark Cantor. We'll be back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Mark Cantor on the emerging Internet of Things. Mark, do you ever see how this emerging Internet of Things might actually connect with, say, maybe nature? Is there any thought in that?
Absolutely. Well, so backyard gardeners will want to know the soil, the moisture consistency of their garden and when to water to help with better conservation of water. right? Mm-hmm. Certainly the park rangers and the government want to be monitoring the status of nature in general, looking for forest fires, looking for, you know, drought, bark beetles, whatever. They could use technology to do that. And then obviously there's weather, you know, which is a big part of nature. You know?
Mm. Yeah, both the microclimates around us and the global weather patterns will be.
Yeah, so one of the classic examples, in fact, was great to hear about the free training sessions available in Santa Cruz, because one example of using our new tool would be a trainer who was helping out their client, and the client's got a Fitbit, you know, and so you can tell how they're working out. So maybe the software knows if it's raining and you've got an appointment scheduled, let's say, with your running club. So you could say, like, if it's raining and I've got this appointment with the running club, well, let's move the appointment automatically to an indoor venue, right? So we don't want to be outside, right? So you could have smarts that would be monitoring weather, monitoring your schedule, and make logical things. So you don't have to go and manually go, okay, everybody, we're moving our clients to the gym, you know. Like, the computer can do that for you, but you've set that up ahead of time, you know.
Hmm. All right, very interesting. What about this whole thing that Google's focused on with the autonomous vehicles? Do you see that as part of the Internet of Things as well?
Absolutely. All this stuff, like I said, my definition is everything. In fact, you know, Cisco's tried to rename it the Internet of Everything just so they can try to take over, right? Which really kind of shows how pathetic they are.
It's like the human network.
Yeah. Exactly. So, look, it's not about the buzzword. It's about what you actually do.
Yeah.
Okay? So here's Google. By the way, Brad Templeton, a good friend of mine, was one of the project leads there. So they've now solved a problem for some of the issues, right? It's not going to be a solution for everybody, but for package delivery and for pickup and drop off. And there's just like a lot of things where this autonomous vehicle makes sense. Yeah. The vehicle has radio control in it. It's using sensors. You want to know status. You want to be smart. Like, you know, if I've got a package, have the vehicle just sit there waiting for me. I don't even have to call anybody. Or like, if I land at the airport and it knows that I'm coming in, don't you want to have that Lyft car waiting for me outside, right?
Yeah, just as like customs, yeah.
Why should I even have to schedule it at all?
Right. It should just anticipate your arrival. Yeah, okay.
So that's what we're talking about, where the smarts are benefiting you. They're really providing value, you know?
What about government? Do you think it could change government a little bit?
Oh, dude, I mean, you know, government government unfortunately means 100 things, right?
So yeah, I guess it would be a fairly radical thing. I mean, what I'm beginning to see is that the Internet is so many are talking about this as being some kind of exo-nervous system, our species.
Right, it is. And so I'll give you like 10 examples.
So right? it would evolve government in the direction of biological models. It's one thing.
Because, right. Okay. Yeah. So if you know, so, and by the way, these are revenue opportunities, which means that we don't have to pay taxes, right? So the classic example right now is the cameras that are at the red lights. Okay. And the government doesn't pay for that. Vendors come in, they set up these cameras at red lights, and when you run through the red light, it takes a picture of your car and your driver's license, and you automatically get a ticket.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So there, that's a great example.
Yeah.
Of,
that's penalizing you, but how could it be useful to us?
Well, parking spaces, right? So so you go into a city and up comes a God's eye view of all the available parking spaces.
Okay. So
just
I could
drive right to where the empty slot is.
That is a pain whenever you're in a city. That's true. That's good. That's a good one.
Yeah. Huh. The other thing would be monitoring city government services, right? So picking up garbage, a tree fell down, power outage, I mean, all that kind of stuff will be more or less automatic. Oh, I'm driving down the road and there's this giant bag of garbage that someone dropped off his truck is sitting there right in the middle of the road, right? I mean, I have to go manually call and let somebody know that there's this garbage and somebody's going to hit that bag and it's going to scatter all over the place. So wouldn't it be nice if debris and other things that fell onto the road, that government would figure that shit out. They go send somebody or one of those autonomous vehicles, they go pick
and clean it up. Right. Right. Yeah, now that brings up one of Sun's big issues is the plastic in the oceans.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. We're killing ourselves by putting so much crap in the oceans. And it'd be nice if we could profit by getting our crap out of the oceans and save the animals while we're at it.
And you know that John Perry Barlow has a startup that is doing algae recycling and generating energy from algae. So there are these various things, and certainly autonomous submarines that would go up there and start cleaning up all the shit that's in the ocean, just scooping it up, you know, it would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, sort of specially designed just to do that job.
Also, Mark, I want to remind you not to cuss. We have FCC rules here.
AM radio.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. I should have told you before, but
I'll do it on our blog page.
Now.
Is that because we're, is it mono or are we at least?
No, just think right George now? Carlin, you know, and that the seven words you're not allowed to say.
Yeah. Okay, what about something more fundamental in government? For example, is it possible that we might be able to consider, say, a direct democracy rather than simply representational?
Well, okay, so I was just with some people yesterday who really believe that choosing random people would get better results than elected officials, right? So I'm fairly radical in that. Any representation, you know, when we got less than 40% of the population voting, anything is better than nothing at this point, you know? By the way, I'm going to go quickly off on one thing.
Sure.
I believe that Hillary could not be elected while she was going through menopause, that only because... postmenopausal. Now she won't, they won't have to worry about her with her finger on the trigger. Right? Because I'm trying to figure out what is the equivalent of all the racism that we're seeing that Obama brought out, right? Well, so what's the equivalent of sexism, right? So, you know, they would never have elected Hillary. But now that she's postmenopausal, oh, it's okay, we can elect her now.
She's not crazy now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like that's the way men think of women. It's fucked up. Oh, sorry. It's unfortunate.
Yes. Yes, it's non-rational.
Right.
Your emotions are rational.
I don't know.
No, and that's the thing about, so what this backlash that's going to happen that is happening, we're seeing it because of the NSA spying. And this whole Sony hack
has
totally highlighted the ability of the hackers to come in. They're the bad guys, you know, and they're going to get that data. They're going to let it out free and let people find out about what Sony really thinks about George Clooney or, you know, whatever. And so then you see the backlash of that and all these theater owners. And it was fantastic to just hear that the independent theaters, they're going to make a fortune running the interview, right? Yeah. I'll go, right?
Yeah.
And so what we see is this backlash because of security and privacy. 30% of Americans refuse to go online. And it's not because they don't have access. It's because they don't want access.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. Like, I noticed on your blog, you said, hey, I'm doing all my blogging on Facebook now. So what are you thinking there? Is Facebook now the place to connect with people online and it's more effective than having your own private space?
Well, I'm not saying it's more effective. I'm just saying that the difference is that every person I know, every ex-girlfriend, right? All the lovers that got away, you know, hint, hint, you know, they're all there on Facebook, right? Now, if I want to do business stuff, I'm going to go to Twitter, right? But I can be my blog. I can be a lone saxophone player standing in the middle of downtown Felton and no one will ever hear me, right?
That's how a blog is. Huh? It's too isolated.
Right. Now, understand that when you're on Facebook, only like 2 or 5% of the people of your friends see your posts, right? Mm-hmm. So Facebook wants you to pay them to guarantee that 100% of your friends will see your post.
Yeah, I noticed that. What's up with that?
It's a very interesting business model. Well, it's how they make money, right? But the difference is that at least on Facebook, I'm engaging with people, I'm talking, I'm learning, whereas, you know, the previous 10 years, I'm blogging by myself, standing in downtown Felton. I felt really good about myself. Once in a while, people would come up to me and tell me that they read my blog, and that's it.
Yeah.
As far as I was concerned, I was standing in the middle of the forest yelling at the trees.
Yeah, yeah. You don't even like using Facebook to point at your blog. You're just like, it's all
I'm
on
just
Facebook.
Blogging in Facebook, right. Yeah.
Right.
Now, what I found as an alternative, let me say the long form, is Medium. Okay, so that's this new tool created by Ev Williams. And if I want to do an essay or a long piece, mm-hmm. I do it on Medium. And Medium, by the way, learned from Tumblr.
Uh-huh.
So the difference between Tumblr and WordPress is that WordPress is a traditional blog. Tumblr was a community, and people could immediately see each other and recommend. And like 90% of the content on Tumblr is people reposting from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like when you retweet something, right? So Tumblr showed a new way to do things, and it showed that the community promotes themselves. And that's what Ev Williams has with Medium. So it's a new kind of tool. And now I regularly go to Medium. Now, meanwhile, I've got 250 RSS feeds, and I haven't looked at it in 6 months.
Right.
You know, because I got enough of that stuff being cherry picked by my social net, and it gets exposed onto Facebook. So I see everything anyway.
Right. Yeah. So just the fact that people are using Facebook to alert the media means you don't need to maintain anything private.
But it's a nice mixture, because my wife and I can have banter, her girlfriends can flirt with me, my kids can get on there, my family's in touch, like my old friends. You know, like yesterday, the Chicago Children's Choir rebroadcast a performance that I was in from 1973.
Wow.
Right? How awesome is that?
Can you hold on till after the break? We got a couple of questions from the audience for you.
I would be honored.
Thank you.
Okay,
be right back.
Folks, Mark Cantor, Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yeah, that's it. We're talking to Mark Cantor initially about the Internet of Things, but we have a few questions from the audience I'd like to pass on to you. One, Greg Panos down in Long Beach says hi, and he wants to know if you're going to CES and what you'd be doing down there, and also what do you think of this VR craze resurrected by Oculus?
Right. Okay, so we decided yesterday I'm not going to go to CES. We're going to play our cards close to the chest.
Uh-huh.
We're not ready to talk yet, so we're going to try to rebrand Mark Cantor and keep his mouth shut. And we will, of course, try to cut off on all obscenity on the radio. Now, in terms of VR, it's another one of those things that came way before its time. And so, you know, it's got a lot of baggage, Second Life, you know. I absolutely do agree. And by the way, in addition to Oculus, there's a secret startup called Magic Leap.
Yes, we've heard about that down in L.A.
Yeah. And in fact, Neil Stephenson just went to go work for them to get a job.
There's quite a bit of secrecy around that.
Right. I mean, they're talking about him building the metaverse, if you know what that is. Right?
Yeah. So
that's some heavy-duty stuff, right? And notice I didn't say S-H-I-T.
That's very good. So, we have people listening.
Okay, so Greg Panos, dude, what's up? Let's just hope that Jared Lanier doesn't come back. We've had enough of him.
Well, okay, what about the lawnmower man and the ideas in that? Do you see any of that?
No, I don't. I don't believe in any of that stuff, right? I don't. I really don't believe in AI. I believe that there's really good humans working to build incredible experiences. That's called Avatar. By the way, the entire special effects industry has been moved up to Vancouver and decimated the LA community because of tax laws. The Canadians gave them tax benefits. So Sony's ImageWorks was shut down. This is like a really bad time to be a special effects person. Look, great new entertainment, ways to make money, that's awesome. But at the end of the day, these people are trying to make money. They're not trying to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
So, you know, the day I see them educating unemployed people, putting people to work, you're using their technology to create jobs or something, that's one thing. Right now, to me, it's just yet another buzzword, you know?
Okay. All right. Fair enough. There's also a question about how do you feel about technology patents in this day and age?
Okay. So, you know, I made my money the first time around, and my three sons have trust funds so they can go to college, right?
Okay.
In fact, they went to college, right? So that worked. And I've been on a roller coaster ride since the last time I saw you guys. I think, Alan, I might have seen you once at a party somewhere, but I haven't seen Sun in like 20 years.
Yeah, 30th right? Mac. You saw Sun briefly.
The 30th Mac.
Yeah,
30th
right.
Mac. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, which was a nightmare. What an abomination.
Compared to what it could have been, yes.
Yeah, okay, so meanwhile, I've been broke, you know. I've gone down to the gutter. I've gone down to the sub-basement, you know. There's nothing like the Phoenix story to talk about the rebirth and creating something over. I basically had this Orson Welles complex where I've been living in the shadows of my earlier accomplishments. So the old Mark Cantor would have screamed and yelled about patents and how they're evil and the purpose is to make money. the next time around, if these venture capitalists, I've got like 5 or 7 patentable ideas. Uh-huh. If these venture capitalists will give me money because I went and hired some lawyer to write some words on a piece of paper and send it into Washington, and that'll convince them to give me $5 or $10 million, I'll do it. Okay? You know, and that's what it comes down to. I got 2 daughters. I want to send them to college.
Yeah.
Those are my priorities right now, yeah, to take care of my family. Yeah. And if patents will help me do that, that's great.
Uh-huh. You know? So a little bit of a cognitive dissonance there, huh?
I had to do it, but you know what? I'm doing it for my family. So
right.
You can't argue with that, right?
But are you saying that patents really do protect intellectual property? Or are you saying that it's just the currency of your trade? Like you have
I'm saying that's the deal with the devil you have to make.
Yeah.
Venture capitalists are the ultimate slime balls, you know, and I guess it's not one of the 7 words, right? But
yeah.
But the point is that the entire system is corrupt.
Sure.
Right? This whole way that these guys make money. See, the difference between now and the way it used to be is that we used to have a company, it would have multiple products, a product would have multiple features in it. And you'd have to actually go off and make money before you had value. And now we're seeing these stories of these companies with billions and billions of dollars have never even charged a dime, right? And they're all banked on the fact that they're going to exploit people, manipulate them, and use and make money off of them later. I mean, like, oh, my God. And if you want to hedge your bet, well, we can always sell off the startup as into indentured servitude so I can at least make 3 times my money instead of 12 or 100. Mm. So, you know, the whole system is corrupt and messed up.
Well, Gregory says you can still sell your daughters to the Taliban.
Or the Boko Haram could come in and just kill them, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That is if you're hanging out at the 3rd Street Promenade or not, you know.
Yeah. Okay, we have a question from Mihai on whether or not you're familiar with this whole geek focus on transcranial direct stimulation.
Yeah.
9-volt
All right, Nirvana. So I was teaching at Case Western for a while, and I met people who were putting probes, electrodes into brains that could get physiological reactions. Okay, now that's not the same as psychological reaction, right?
Yeah.
So there's all these borders to cross. By the way, one of your advertisers was talking about medicalization, and then it turns out he's selling supplements. Okay, so to me, I've become a nutritarian, right? So I believe that the natural nutrients in fruits and vegetables, it has worked for me. Uh-huh. As long as I'm moving my body and I've got these natural nutrients, I can feel better, healthier, and lose weight, okay? It is proven to me, okay? And that has motivated me and got me going. Now, we talked earlier about how the diet business is like this fantastical $50 billion thing.
Yeah.
But if you don't have motivation, you're not participating and working with it. So when you start talking to me about electrodes and things that are going to try to somehow overcome motivation or supplement your emotions or stuff, no, I'm not into that. I think that at the end of the day, it's a challenge between you and your psyche and your soul. And if you look at your children in the eyes and you want to be alive to see your grandchildren, you know, you're going to try to get healthy. You know, it's...
Yeah. Okay. Well, the way they look at that, it's almost like a mood-altering drug. Electrostimulation of the brain is become a popular new hobby because it doesn't cost very much. And
all right. So look, when I check myself into the Ross Hospital and Sir Francis Drake for marijuana addiction, and so I learned about the cerebral cortex and where heroin addicts and nicotine works, you know, and marijuana doesn't have that, but it has other stimulants. You know, look, we all get high and buzzed in lots of different ways. Some people just look at a white wall, you know, and meditate, okay?
Yeah.
So everybody gets high different ways. You know, I'm not going to deny that of somebody. You know, just moving your endorphins. And I notice you got techno music playing on your thing. You know, people like to hit the dance floor and just go rave out, you know. So different people get high different ways. That's cool. I'm not into preventing or saying you shouldn't get high. I'd like to praise Jah Rastafari.
Gotcha.
I mean, is that okay to say that on the radio?
Absolutely. We've been doing shows on that topic, so we're totally there with you. Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left, but if people want to know more about what you're up to now and your tools.
Yeah, once you're out of stealth mode, or what should they do
where
now?
Should they go?
If they
where can they go now?
So, all right, so for $50,000 or more, you can go to interfaceplatform.com. Wow. We will have an angel list page, right? So we're in stealth mode and we're raising money. So our constituents are people who write checks, you know? So God bless everybody else. I'll get to you eventually. You know, I can't do everything all at once. We'll get there. Interfaceplatform.com is the current informational site, which okay. gives you the least amount of information as possible, you know? Or you can go follow me on Facebook because I'd be walking and rambling and talking about everything.
Okay. All right. What's exciting for New Year's?
My family's coming to visit me. So I've been commuting back and forth between here and Charlotte, North Carolina, where my wife works for Wells Fargo.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So we lived in Cleveland for 5 years and we gave up on it. We moved down to Charlotte and I'm commuting back and forth. Yeah. So my family's going to come out here and my children who all left when they're 5 or 6 years old, now they're going to come back and rediscover their hometown, which they don't even know. Right.
Wow.
It's 5 years later. So we're going to have a blast. And we're going to go. We're going to start with the cable car and dim sum and the ferry building and
awesome.
Muir Woods. Just have a great time.
Yeah. Awesome. Really check out the Bay Area. Huh? Good.
Nice.
And
Mark.
If you accidentally want to invite me to one of your parties, I wouldn't mind coming.
Okay.
Well. That'll be on Facebook. That's how we do it, you know?
Okay.
Keep on, buddy. All right. Thanks for
Yeah, appreciate your presence
your time,
here
Mark.
Today, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, anytime.
That was really fun.
All right, bye.
All right, take care. Have a good day. We'll be chatting with you in the new year. So thanks, folks. We have one more show before the end of the new year. We'll be seeing you next week. Have a great week. Have a wonderful Christmas and happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and all that good stuff.
All right. Dr. Future Show on KSCO, Santa Cruz, San Jose, San Luis, Monterey. Thanks for listening.